After decades of recessions and struggle, most people just aren't hopeful for the future of the economy. In a 2023 survey conducted by the Wall Street Journal, nearly 80% of Americans said they don't think the next generation will live better lives. Young people are afraid they'll be stuck in low-paying jobs forever, barely earning enough to survive, let alone retire. Recently, though, the idea of a great wealth transfer has been seen by some as a light at the end of the tunnel. Over the next 20 years, the silent generation and the baby boomers will pass away, leaving an estimated $84.4 trillion in savings and assets behind. It's a whole lot of money, and hopefully it's enough to tip the scales back towards a more equal playing field. But will this actually happen, and how much of the money will the average person see? Of course, when you mention a wealth transfer, it's hard not to think about the pandemic. For a lot of people, it was like the 2008 recession happened all over again. When it first hit, millions lost their jobs in industries like hospitality. And from March of 2020 to October of the same year, over 60 million claims for unemployment insurance were filed in the US. That's hundreds of thousands more than the average. Then there was the damage to the overall economy caused by so many businesses going into hibernation. A few different figures got tossed around for the total cost, but a widely cited Harvard paper put it at around $16 trillion once you add it all together. It's a debt we'll be paying for years, and we're already seeing the effects. It's the justification for the massive inflation and price rises we've seen so far. But of course, this isn't the full story. A lot of that hardship has been caused by corporate profiteering off of the crisis. While the average American got poorer, the richest Americans made an absolute killing. The 10 richest men in the US doubled their money over the course of the pandemic, giving them 6 times more wealth than the poorest 3 billion people in the entire world. Some of that profit was from inflation. A lot more, though, was from what amounts to price gouging. Take a look at pretty much any company that raised their prices during the crisis, and you'll find that they also gave massive bonuses to their executives and shareholders. It's just yet more evidence of the massive levels of inequality in modern society. But it also shouldn't really be anything new if you've been paying attention. While this was a massive transfer of wealth, it still falls far behind what's coming in the near future, when a different kind of financial inequality in society gets addressed. Well, it should be pretty clear to most people now that there's a massive wealth gap between generations. Of course, it's pretty natural for older people to be richer than young people. They've simply had more time. And it means they've been able to work more hours, earn more money, get inheritance, and get better jobs. And on top of that, they've also had much more time to invest their earnings and see their wealth grow over time. This is all natural and expected. While economic statistics don't go back far enough, it's pretty safe to assume this has generally been true for thousands of years. But it doesn't explain why older generations feel almost unnaturally richer than younger ones. When you look at the data, every generation born after 1950 has been worse off than previous generations. A 2023 paper by David Sturrock explored this in detail. People born in the 1960s, for example, were poorer on average than those who were the same age but born in the 1950s. It's gotten even worse for each subsequent generation. People born in the 1980s in the USA are represented by the small line in the bottom right of the graph, and they're already off to a rocky start. Even this early on in their careers, they're poorer on average than people just 10 years older than them. At this point, it all looks pretty bad, so what's actually causing this? Well, there's a few different explanations that have been thrown around for why this has happened. First, there's what we can call the avocado toast theory. The general idea is that each successive generation puts more focus on consumption and fleeting pleasure. Through this logic, young people are spending more of their money on things which aren't worth anything later on in life, like holidays or overpriced coffee. Of course, this doesn't really hold up as a solid answer as to why people are getting poorer. Surveys of millennials, for example, showed they're not spending more money than other generations do on impractical purchases. Instead, they're spending proportionally more on things like rent, food, and electricity. Leads us into our second attempt at an explanation, one which hinges on prosperity in recession. Just look at the economic environments that people born in the 1950s lived through. Except for a few minor bumps, most of their working lives were spent in an age of prosperity and unrestricted growth. Wage and asset prices steadily increased, meaning people could invest more money into their future, and those investments quickly gained lots of value. It fits in with the picture of a blue-collar worker being able to buy a 4-bedroom house for their young family. Then that house easily increases in value by over 1,000%. Meanwhile, people born after them have been dealt a worse hand. Growth has tapered off, which along with 2 recessions within a decade of each other, destroyed young people's chances at a life as plentiful as their parents enjoyed. While this picture might seem more accurate, it's also definitely more depressing. But there is a third explanation as to why older generations seem so much better off than younger people do. An explanation that leaves at least some room for hope. People born in the 40s and 50s were the healthiest generation the world has ever seen, at least comparatively. In lots of the developed world, they could enjoy plentiful food and a diverse diet. Combine that with today's modern medicine and this will easily be the longest lived generation ever, which also means they've held on to their money for a longer time, especially compared to previous generations who died younger on average and passed on their wealth earlier on. Meanwhile, each younger generation spends more time in education and enters the workforce at a later date. Then they have to wait longer for their inheritance, and it goes towards explaining why each generation might be worse off. But it's this third explanation that brings us onto the idea of the great wealth transfer. $84 trillion that are gonna fall into younger people's hands. In lots of people's minds, this will be the jumpstart that our stagnant economy needs to give people hope again. It will supposedly even out the inequality that's come from the 2008 recession and COVID. At least that's the optimistic version. However, the question still remains though, is this actually going to happen? However, they'll be passing on to a generation that's already lived through multiple recessions and financial crises, who have seen just how quickly something like a 401k can lose double digits overnight. So an entirely new generation of wealth will be going about things a bit differently than their parents and grandparents. A 2024 Bank of America study just found that over 80% of these young wealthy Americans are looking to diversify into fine arts as part of their overall portfolio strategy. Luckily for them and us, our longtime sponsor Masterworks is making those same assets easily investable. Their art investing platform has distributed back a total of $60 million in investor proceeds across 23 exits. Right now, low prices in the art market are demonstrating a rare entry opportunity, and even still, Masterworks posted another profitable return from selling a Basquiat painting for $8 million recently. Masterworks handles all of the legwork, authentication, acquisition, and storage. All you do is invest in a piece of artwork you like, and once the painting is sold, potential net proceeds from the sale get distributed to the investors. And as a Moon viewer, you can start investing right away by using the QR code on the screen or by going to masterworks.app/moon. And it's important to note that past sales and previous offerings are not indicative of future results. Investing always involves risk. And for disclosures, go to masterworks.com/CD. To answer that problem, we need to look at how that $84 trillion is actually distributed and who actually owns it. This chart shows us the general distribution of wealth across generations in the US from the first quarter of 2024, with nearly 52% of the total amount, baby boomers or people born between 1946 and 1964, are by far the richest generation. The silent generation and anyone older than them make up another 13% of the total. It leaves about a third of the US's total wealth still in play, most of which is owned by people from Generation X. The remaining figure, which amounts to less than 10% of the total wealth, is distributed between Millennials and Generation Z. So what does this tell us? Well, at first glance, it seems to give a lot of power to the idea of a great wealth transfer. Nearly two-thirds of the wealth in the US is owned by people born before 1964. Even the youngest people in this age group will be 80 years old in 2 decades' time. By that point, we could reasonably expect most of them to have passed away. It's not something anyone should be looking forward to, a lot of parents and grandparents will be lost, but this natural process does seem to offer the wider economy an opportunity to redistribute itself. It's estimated over the next 2 decades, boomers and the silent generation are going to hand down over $84 trillion in savings, assets, and pensions. Some of that money will go to charities, which are often included in people's wills, but the majority, around $72 trillion, will instead pass to the families of those who pass away. A 2021 paper estimated how this will be split. Only $4 trillion will go to other baby boomers, while $30 trillion and $27 trillion will go to Gen Xers and Millennials respectively. The remaining $11 trillion will pass straight to Generation Z. It brings us to yet another problem with the idea of a great wealth transfer. That $72 trillion that boomers and the silent generation will pass along is not going to be spread out equally. Quite simply, not all baby boomers are rich. In fact, most of them aren't. They haven't been spared by the rise of inequality. From 2004 to 2016, the share of wealth among baby boomers got even less equal. In 2004, the poorer half of baby boomers owned just 3% of the wealth. Over the next 12 years, it dropped by a third to just 2% of the wealth. Meanwhile, the top 25% of baby boomers went from owning 86% of the wealth to 91% of it. What all of this means is that a small proportion of the population will come into a lot of money, but it won't really mean anything for everyone else. The meaningful split is between homeowners and renters. Elderly homeowners have an average net worth of around $300,000, with a little under half of that tied up in property. Meanwhile, renters had an average of just $6,700 to their names. So lots of elderly people have pretty much nothing to hand down financially, while those that do often have lots of it tied up in their homes. It's not a good picture for most people, and even people who are set for an inheritance might not really get as much as they expect. expect, there's a lot of different things that are going to take away from what people can pass down. The most costly is elderly care. Anyone who's got parents or grandparents in full-time care knows how incredibly expensive it often is. In fact, while price rises in other sectors have begun to level off recently, the same can't be said for elder care. For years now, rises in those costs have steadily outpaced inflation in the US. In the UK, it's even worse. In just the 2 years between 2021 and 2023, elderly care costs rose by nearly 20%. Today, the cost of the average care home is over £1,300 a week, 4 times more than the state pension pays out. While modern medicine is a blessing and has saved so many lives, it does mean elderly people with complex and costly health issues tend to live a lot longer. These costs can absolutely decimate any modest inheritance. The industry is absolutely swamped as well, which has led to much higher demand and therefore a much higher price. The baby boomer generation is proportionally the largest, which means there's an ever-increasing amount of people needing full-time support. We can expect far more people will need care over the next 20 years than will be willing to provide it. Corporate owners of care homes have been happy to enjoy the increased demand, prices, and profits, but they rarely put it back into the business. Instead, because spaces are generally limited and demand will always be high, they can pay the bare minimum in running costs. Understaffing is almost expected in care homes, while pay remains low for employees. It means that if you want to be sure that your elderly relative or loved one is getting the care they deserve, you've only really got two options. Either you can pay more for a more expensive care home, which is obviously impossible for most people, or you have to be there regularly, so that you can be sure your loved one's needs are being taken care of. The bottom line though is that tons of people just won't see this great wealth transfer happen for them. Any inheritance they might have been expecting is long gone before they can collect it, or it never even existed to begin with. In the worst of cases, the death of an elderly loved one can actually end up costing their relatives more money once you factor in predatory funeral costs. It might be true that the great wealth transfer offers some people a lot of opportunity. It just might not be the right people to actually help the economy for average normal people. Just take a look at what's beginning to happen to the agriculture industry. If there's one thing that nearly all of America's farmers have in common is their age. In 2022, the average age of a farmer from the US was a staggering 58 years old. In the 5 years before, the average age of a farmer got older, rising by a little over half a year. It means that farmers are only getting older on average, with a large proportion getting close to retirement. Agriculture is a hard industry to survive in. If you're running a small operation like most of America's farms, then it means long hours of manual labor. Whether you can make a profit or not is dependent not just on your work, but on the weather, crop harvests, and price fluctuations in the market. Even in good years, the margins are low and they've been getting lower. It all makes farming an unattractive prospect for young people, even if they have enough money to get started in the first place. Meanwhile, lots of farmers are getting too old to operate their farms, and often they can't even afford to retire as their debts are so high, forcing lots of them to sell. Now, part of the great wealth transfer is going to involve lots of small farms going under the hammer, with only a few new farmers to fill the vacuum. It's a crisis, and if there's anyone who knows how to take advantage, it's the corporations. While they might not be very interested in agriculture itself as an industry, they are interested in the land the farms are on. Just like any asset like property or stocks, it's ripe for speculation and financial manipulation. But owning farmland as an asset also carries lots of tax benefits. As a long-term investment, it dodges the short-term capital gains tax, which is a lot higher than the tax you get if you own something for over a year. You can even avoid the capital gains tax entirely if you sell one farm to buy another, letting corporations constantly leap from farm to farm, gaining a larger property portfolio in the process. But that's not the only benefit for wealthy investors. You can write off other losses against the cost of operating the farm, while getting access to government subsidies meant to help out smaller family-owned operations. It's a perfect storm of incentives that are turning mass corporate ownership of farmland into something unavoidable. But with all of this out of the way, how bad has it gotten so far? Well, this is where we finally get some good news. The gold rush for corporations here hasn't really started yet, although we are starting to see some concerning trends. It's hard to really get a good idea of how many farms are owned by corporations as you'd imagine them, because technically most farms are corporate owned. Even for small farmers, it makes financial sense to run your farm as a corporation on paper. So while a very large percentage of farms are corporately owned, lots of those are still actually owned by the farmers themselves. Despite that confusion, we can still gain some insight though. Farmland has been rising in cost at around 5% a year, generally outpacing inflation. That's despite the profit margins for agriculture falling, as well as the demand for farmland among normal people also going down. It means it's likely that there's speculation going on, and a bubble might be starting to form. We've already seen how much damage corporate ownership of single-family homes has done to the overall market. When investment firms and hedge funds got their billions involved, it made it all more expensive and priced out regular people. The fear is that the same thing is now going to happen to farmland as well. While it hasn't really caught on yet amongst the Wall Street elites, it's a growing trend. Famously, Bill Gates has bought thousands and thousands of hectares of farmland. Bezos owns over 400,000 hectares himself. Large investment firms have also gotten in on the rush. From 2008 to 2023, the amount of farmland bought up by investment firms went up by over 200%. The reasons this is happening are fairly simple on the face of it. Things like single-family homes and farmland, they're stable assets, or at least in the case of homes, they used to be. For a company whose only interest is in safeguarding and growing their pile of money, it's a great place to put your profits. The same thing that happened with the property market could easily happen on a smaller scale with farmland. At first, decades before the 2008 crash, with the whole property bubble bursting, banks just saw property as a boring, safe asset. But as they started speculating on them and betting more money on the housing market stability, it became much more lucrative. Over time, the greed for more profits only got worse, leading to more speculation, which inflated the value of property even more. The banks and the investment funds made even more money until it all came crashing down, taking the economy and millions of people's savings with it. Farmland right now is on a similar journey today, but with a few key differences. We're still seeing the beginning of speculation. Prices are going up despite the reduced demand right now, and it's because billionaires and investment funds see the long-term opportunity here. The supply of land can't go up, but the demand can. In fact, the supply of farmable land is going to shrink instead. As the climate gets hotter, more land is estimated to become unsuitable for crops or pasture. It's these signs that point to comparatively low prices now, with much higher prices down the line. It's not a strong enough bet for a real fire sale on farmland right now, but it's getting more attractive to institutional investors every single day. COVID was one opportunity. Lots of excess profits were lying around for the funds and the billionaires. The great wealth transfer will offer a similar opportunity by lowering the prices. The situation gets truly concerning though when you look at what the consequences will be for the future. While it's pretty doubtful that Bill Gates is plotting a feudal takeover by controlling the food supply, it does give him much more power. And as we've shown in the video we did on him before, he's certainly not the guy who should be getting this power.
It's really not just one person controlling that much farmland. It's having a technocrat. I think that Bill Gates, not just Bill Gates, but the people like Bill Gates, find technology as being the solution for every problem. If the only tool you got is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Mm. And you know, with what he's done in Africa and India and some other places, caused me to really, nothing I can do about it. It's caused me to really disdain technocrats controlling land.
We like to think we've advanced past these medieval seeming ideas, but at the end of the day, control over food and land is what's given people power for thousands of years. This transition from lots of independent farmers owning their farms to just a few wealthy landowners is a slide back towards feudalism, however you look at it. There might not be any castles or knights anymore, but the power is still shifting in that direction. It's pretty likely that this isn't what drives these decisions. It's probably just about money, as it always is. But all these greedy decisions have a way of eventually shifting the scales themselves. Inevitably, it all lines up with the greater shift towards inequality. They want to own everything, and they have the money to buy it. In this way, the great wealth transfer doesn't represent an escape from this reality. Instead, it's just another opportunity the powerful will use to take even more of the pie. Eventually, as just a few entities come to own nearly all of the farmland, it would let them create a monopoly and manipulate prices even more. With such big problems, it's hard to offer real solutions. But it is worth mentioning though that this problem with farmland will only get worse if more regular people aren't willing to take the risk and buy these farms themselves. You can be sure that most farmers would much rather their land went to another family rather than getting added to some Wall Street property portfolio. They're not selling it to corporations and investors out of choice. So while farming is one of the hardest jobs you can do, it's also one of the most rewarding simply because it puts some distance between you and this modern world of greed and financial exploitation. The death of family-owned farms will also be the death of one of the only bargaining chips regular people still have, and we can't let them take this away as well.